cooperative specializing in foods from local and organic producers. Food Front is located in Northwest Portland at 24th and Northwest Thurman. For more information, the number is 503-222-5658. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Monday in the Environment. I'm your host, Scott Forrester. Today, as advertised, the copper mine proposed for the Mount St. Helens area, water, and the future of public electricity, and a bit of PUD history as a part of a series. We have our guests coming up soon. This and more on Monday on the Environment. Thanks, folks. That is from Neil Young and Crazy Horse. It's a natural anthem from the early 70s, in case folks want to know. We've had some inquiries. Before we get to our guest, quickly, I'll say that I enjoyed filling in last week on a show. It was open phones. It was a pleasure. Got some feedback. Three folks called and said they really enjoyed it, and one said they didn't enjoy it, that I didn't give the right-wing guest a fair time. Criticism taken. I think 3-1 odds are pretty good here at KBOO, and I hope to continue driving on. The main thing is we're seeking the truth, and as long as conservatives, right-wings, libertarians, anybody else we disagree with wants to stick with the facts and analyze the facts, we together can try to figure out the truths before us. If they don't, well, then we'll get on to the next caller. And in the meantime, we want to get the first guest here. We'll do a quick hit and run, Mr. Engineer. Ms. Platt, are you there? Ms. Platt, go ahead.
Hello, this is Emily Platt. I'm Executive Director with the Gifford Pinchot Task Force.
Hey, thanks for joining me today. Now, you have something going on tonight, and that's why I called you.
Great. Yes, we have, there are dueling presentations on the proposal to put a copper, gold, silver, and molybdenum mine just outside the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument. That's a 3,000-acre mine, and a presentation will be given by the Gifford Pinchot Task Force as well as by the Vice President of the mining company tonight up in Longview.
What's the location and time for our listeners in Washington or even Portland that want to take a look at this cutting-edge type mine?
Sure. It's at the Longview Community College, and there's two presentations that will be given, one of them at 3:30 and then the same presentation again at 7 p.m. And for folks in Portland, Longview is just a quick drive up I-5, probably about 45 minutes.
So the same presentations will be given basically at two different times?
Correct.
So what is it again, the times and the place?
3:30 p.m. and 7 o'clock p.m. at Longview Community College.
Do you have an address for that for folks that might not be aware?
You know, I actually don't,
okay.
But while we're talking, I can look it up on
Longview Community College. You can Google it, folks, and certainly if you're in Longview, just stop by. It's a relatively small town. People are friendly, and they'll tell you where to go, and they'll probably tell you to go to the meeting, too. The idea is we have this proposed copper mine, 3,000 acres. That's, over a half square mile. And if I'm not mistaken, this is very similar to the proposal, it might be before your time, of the Kinross Copper Corporation that wanted to do a mine up the North Fork of the Santiam River in the Willamette Valley. Different company, obviously, but environmentalists fought really hard on that and beat back the proposal. And I think it was similar circumstances that precious metals were really high, making this extraction more favorable to businesses.
Yeah, you know, I'm not familiar with the other copper mine proposal, but this one is, it is pretty ridiculous, and certainly it would have a huge impact on the area. And this is just outside, of course, the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, which is internationally renowned as a scientific research grounds, and there are threatened salmon and steelhead in the area. It's also, interestingly enough, upstream from Kelso, Longview, and Castle Rock.
Now, what is it on the Lewis River? Is it in Lewis River drainage?
It's actually in the Green River Valley, but yes, the greater Lewis River area.
So does the Green River flow into the Lewis, or is it a separate one?
You know, we'd have to ask Ryan.
Okay, he's your, and I haven't had a chance to check the watershed, but is it your understanding that the water draining off this mine would affect the municipal water supplies of Longview?
It would. It does flow into the municipal water supplies for these towns. So,
and what are the towns again? Longview and what are the other two?
Kelso, Longview, Castle Rock, and there are some other smaller towns along the way, too.
Okay, well, that's obviously very important. Plus, you know, fish are an indicator species, and they're very sensitive to toxins such as heavy metals.
Absolutely, and there are threatened salmon and steelhead in the area. There's also a lot of fishing in the area, and a lot of the toxic waste that is expected to be leached into the groundwater bioaccumulates in the fish. So eating any of these fish, which are world-renowned runs of these salmon and steelhead, could become actually quite dangerous for all the people who use the area.
All right, now we're going to, this is just a hit and run. We'll have you back in the near future, and folks that want to check this out, I hope you have a request that you have your presentation, at least, if not the the head of the propaganda for the Mineral Corporation here in Portland to take advantage of the huge population of people. I would suggest, folks, that even though this is across the border, it's close by, and this also sets a precedent for the Cascades, that if they can have this massive mine, which is the heavy metal equivalent of mountaintop strip mining in West Virginia. If you want to treat our area, where you slice mountains and bury them, take the tailings and put them into what used to be stream beds, and then have the leachate leach from rain through the centuries, the gift that keeps giving, then I suggest that we learn about this. And one question, Ms. Platt, the process, what is next in the process? This is on National Forest land. Have they done a environmental impact statement? Where are we on that?
You know, they are just starting to do an environmental assessment of basically the first step in the process, which would be exploratory mining. So they're doing an environmental assessment to look at what the impacts.
Okay, I think we lost you. I can't hear you, Mr. Engineer. If that's the case, then my apologies to the guest. That was Emily Platt with the Gifford Pinchot Task Force. And if you have, Mr. Engineer, the next guest, let's go ahead and bring up the next guest, please. Hello, Mr. Schaff, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Are you there now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Hey, thanks for joining me, and thanks for waiting. Could you introduce yourself to our guest? We're switching to water now.
Yes, I'm David Schaff. I'm the acting director of the Portland Water Bureau.
Okay, and if you could speak up just a wee bit more, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Now, the Oregonian, or as I often call them, the Distortagonian, because they're often biased, especially when it's pro-corporate news, did a story on you, and I think that they treated you unfairly in that they make Portland look like the little spoiler, and that Tualatin Valley Water District is the innocent little lamb that just can't get the deal they want. What's your perspective?
Well, we have been selling water to a number of wholesale customers almost since we've existed, and we are just at the tail end of 25-year agreements with a number of our wholesale customers. So we've been in negotiations for the last 2 years with our wholesale customers to do another long-term agreement. And just recently, within the last 3 months, we came to agreement at the staff level on new 20-year agreements to sell wholesale water.
Now, let me interrupt you here, and you can chime in with the website if you got it in your head. It's portlandonline.com for sure, and you can guide us the rest of the way. But we got into this, and perhaps I didn't give a proper introduction. These are the wholesale water contracts. Last ones, a quarter century. They've been in negotiation for at least 2 years with outside cities and water districts that use Bull Run water, and we sell it to them. We're the supplier not only to ourselves but to others, and now we're negotiating the next long-term agreements, which in this case is proposed to be 20 years. But the Twombly Water District is coming back with a last-minute, hey, let's make it a 10-year agreement. And what isn't said in the Oregonian article, which I'm going to put forward, and I'd be interested in hear your comment, Mr. Schaff, is the idea is that what they're doing is they're making a drive to go to the Willamette River. So folks at Cabo Land that are in Tualatin Valley Water District, serving Beaverton and other areas, even the cities of Tigard, Sherwood just voted to go to the Willamette River at Wilsonville. Frankly, they're trying to pitch going to the Willamette in an effort to get basically leverage in their long-term negotiations. But the reality is many of their elected officials actually want to have the citizens drink out of the Willamette River, and that leads to now what appears to be a last-minute complaint in an effort to get leverage. Any comment, Mr. Schaff?
Well, we actually have no problems if they decide to go to the Willamette. That's up to them. What we're prepared to do is sell them water. If they want to buy our water, we'd be glad to sell it to them. But if they decide for one reason or another that they want to go to the Willamette, we're going to wish them well and sell our water to other people.
That's as long as we don't go to the Willamette, which actually the city council previous has declared that it's the position of the city of Portland not to drink out of the Willamette.
We will not ever need to drink out of the Willamette River. We have water for the citizens of Portland and the Bull Run that will last us for decades.
If not centuries.
If not centuries.
Especially if the wholesale customers don't buy, then that's more water for us.
That is, although, you know, our interest is in selling the water since we have it available. So, you know, it is something where we like the idea of selling the water that we have available. We are making sure that we're not selling so much that we cannot cover our own needs for now and for the next 50 years or more from now. But so we are not interested in going to the Willamette. We have no need to go to the Willamette. But if other jurisdictions want to look at alternate sources of water, we're fine with that. We'd like to sell them our water, but if they want to move on to something else, that's fine too.
Now, what is the website so folks can take a look at the draft agreement that you've made public for all people to see?
It's portlandonline.com/water, and there's a link to the wholesale water sales agreement on that front page.
Okay, it's a wholesale water sales agreement. And that's for everyone to see.
Right.
And that is a really great step compared to the previous history of about 25 years ago where it was negotiated up to the last minute and there was, I think, just one or two city council meetings and that was it, hardly any testimony. To go forward, there is the subject of costs, and it was expressed in the article that the cities of Rockwood and Gresham, which are also very large wholesale consumers. I live in Gresham, and it's almost 100,000 people, fourth largest city in Oregon. Rockwood, I think, serves about 43,000 folks, maybe a little bit less than that. That they're concerned that if the West Side water districts break away, that it'll increase overall costs to the rest of the wholesale purchasers. Is that correct, and to what extent?
Well, that was certainly one of the impacts of the deal that we negotiated. The goal from the city's standpoint was to sell water to these 19 wholesale customers in such a way that it would have no negative impact on Portland ratepayers. So if we went from 41 million gallons a day to something less than that, we would spread the cost out among all those that are remaining. So we understand that Gresham and Rockwood are concerned that if TVWD pulls out of the agreement, decides not to buy water from us, that under the terms of the negotiated agreement, their water rates could go up. And we're looking at that. We understand that they don't want to be held hostage by another one of the wholesalers.
Now, how do you answer the charge that into the future contract, that the city of Portland is, in essence, is getting subsidies by the outside cities and districts through their rates. They're actually keeping water rates cheaper than would normally would be, more than just sharing costs. They're actually subsidizing Portland water drinkers.
Well, that's just nonsense. We are selling a commodity, and we are selling water that we have available, and there is absolutely no requirement that they buy it. We're negotiating prices with them, and if they don't want to buy it for the price that we're willing to sell it, they don't have to buy it.
Now, in terms of, and you're laying the financing out there, right? You've calculated certain main charges like the West Side Supply Pipeline,
yes,
and prorating that out because that is a facility, an infrastructure that's used exclusively to transmit the water from one side of the river to the other, so therefore only a subsection of the ratepayers benefit.
Right. It is primarily, it's called the Washington County Supply Line, and it's primarily to deliver water from our reservoir in Palo Butte over to the west side. We do use water from that pipeline to serve Portland customers, but it's primarily serving our wholesale customers.
So would it be fair to say that in this go-round, that the Water Bureau has kind of laid its cards on the table? Obviously, there's secret negotiations until the final numbers are able to come to the public, but that, in essence, the financial information and the basic structure of the agreement is literally open for everyone to take a look at if they care to do so.
Absolutely.
And so what is the next steps then? So let's just say, assuming that Tualatin Valley Water District decides to sign on, and this is just a bluff to try to get cheaper rates, what happens next in terms of the process? Where does it go for the people or the city council for comment?
Well, we are going to be finished with our creating the rate model in March. Then we will know the exact price down to the penny that we are proposing to sell the water to our wholesale customers. We will go to the council, the Portland City Council, with authorization to actually offer the contract, the deal, to these 19 wholesalers. They will have a period of time to decide whether or not they want to accept that deal. If they do, then we will sign agreements, and we will have a new agreement in place by July 1, 2006.
Now, you mentioned rate model. For folks that aren't used to this, you have a complex computer model which is used to calculate various inputs and come out with the price of the commodity, in this case, water. Now, when that model is completed, which will be able to be used by all parties to check the numbers, the prices, will that also be open to the public?
Yes.
Very well. Also, out in East County, we have the Wellfield, the Columbia Wellfield, various wells used by the city of Portland as backup supply or during hot weather or when the Bull Run pipelines are out of commission. Also, Fairview, Troutdale, now Gresham and Rockwood are joining together to get groundwater. It's my understanding that when they draw down the water, that it not only affects other Portland wells, but also potentially Troutdale, Fairview, and the city of Vancouver. Is that of some concern that if Rockwood and Gresham specifically decide to use as their primary source groundwater, where they've in the past used Bull Run as their primary source, that they're actually in a way affecting our emergency supply? And how do you address that?
No, it is my understanding that they don't. The well field does recharge itself, and they may draw down, but it's not to the point where the water then is not available and wouldn't meet our needs. It's a huge source of water, and Gresham and Rockwood aren't going to be drawing it, dipping into it enough to affect our ability to generate water for either emergency events during the winter when our Bull Run water is not available, or in the summer to supplement Bull Run water if we have a hot, dry summer. So we are not particularly concerned about that.
Okay, so you're not concerned about that, but what if they decide to use the groundwater and say, hey, we don't need Bull Run water?
More power to them. That means more Bull Run water available to us. I don't think that's going to happen, but they would not, even if they went 100% to groundwater, which is just not very likely. It would still not affect our ability to pump water out of the well fields if we need to for summer augmentation or emergency purposes in the winter.
Yeah, now a few more questions here, and I appreciate you joining us today. Now, the Powell Valley Road Water District, most people aren't aware of it, in southeast Portland going towards Gresham, has now been absorbed by the city of Portland after many years. Now, there was a lot of groundwater wells being used by them primarily with, I think, backup Bull Run. Are you running those groundwater wells for normal city needs, or are those patrons now getting pure Bull Run water?
They're getting 100% Bull Run water.
And are we going to run those Powell Valley wells as backup, similar to the Columbia well field?
Some may be linked with our well field. Some of their wells are fairly shallow, and we don't believe are of the quality that our well field water or the Bull Run water is. So we will have them available as emergency backups. You know, if we were to have,
right,
for instance, a catastrophic earthquake, we would have them available to us for emergency purposes.
Sure.
But that would be the second tier of water.
What's the status of the EPA lawsuit where the city is now fighting the EPA for mandates to filter out
Cryptosporidium.
Thank you.
We are going to be filing. We actually have to file the request the rule with the D.C. Circuit this month. We're just starting what will probably be a very long process.
Mm-hmm. And will you post that filing once the filing is public and filed with the court appropriately?
Yeah, we'd be glad to. Of one page.
Let me make that a request, and I'd like to also see that we use the Portland online,
right,
website for a continuation of these documents so that individuals like myself and others won't necessarily have to make separate public records requests.
It will be the exact same place as the wholesale contracts. On the front page of our website, there is a spot to click on for what's called LT2 information.
Right, that's great. And one last question, and again, thank you, and I don't think this will be the last time that we'll interview you. You are the interim director. Do you have I actually got two questions. Do you have an intention of becoming the permanent director?
Well, that's up to Commissioner Leonard. So you have to talk to him.
Well, we sure will. I did invite him, but he currently has a conflict. He's out, I think, with Water Bureau employees as we speak.
Oh, okay.
The last thing is the well field. Are you aware of the radon levels in the various wells in general?
No, I am not. Did you need some information about that?
Well, yeah. Why don't I invite you back in the future, and we'll talk in more detail about a naturally occurring radioactive substance, an alpha emitter called radon. Now, we normally think of radon gas getting in your basement or closed spaces, but it's freely available, depending on which aquifer you're drawing from, at higher or lower levels. But it's there, and it causes cancer. And it's just a matter of how much cancer. But if you compare in our region groundwater to Bull Run water, Bull Run has zero naturally occurring radiation, and yet our groundwater does have naturally occurring radiation. The National Academy of Sciences has stated that zero is the amount of alpha-emitting radiation that they can recommend, although the federal government is proposing, I think, a safe drinking water standard of 400 picocuries per liter, which is a political statement, not one based on health. So I'd like to invite you back for that one.
Okay.
And thank you very much for joining me today.
You're quite welcome.
You take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was David Schaff, Interim Director of the Portland Water Bureau, gracious enough to join us here at KBOO. And then Mr. Engineer, is Mr. Meek there, or shall I prattle on? All right, then. Thank you. I'll go on, folks, with a bit of PUD history. There are six People's Utility Districts that serve electricity in the state of Oregon. And, for instance, there are some that don't. Right here in Gresham and Portland, there's the Rockwood Water People's Utility District. Under the Oregon Constitution, People's Utility Districts were constituted in the Oregon Constitution in 1930 by a very popular citizen initiative that was sponsored by the American Federation of Labor on the left and the Oregon Grange on the right. So you had the urban and rural divide. You had conservative and liberal, and they bypassed both Republicans and Democrats that were taking the power trust money, and they were so enamored with the power company's corporate cash, that they just couldn't see themselves creating the ability for public power. So the citizens did it. Since then, there's only been the creation of a half dozen, and some PUDs like Rockwood only do water, but they can do water and electricity. Some choose not to. The largest PUD in Oregon is the Central Lincoln PUD, which, as you might gather, is around Newport and goes many square miles into the rural area. And in the history here, we have that in 1940, they put it to a vote of the voters in the city of Newport and an adjacent 18 square miles of unincorporated territory, and the measure passed. And that's where they created their name, Central Lincoln PUD. 2 years later, in 42, a bond measure, which is required, was voted on to acquire the electrical facilities of West Coast Power, which was already serving parts of the area, and the measure also passed. A year later, they end up buying all the poles and wires and officially went online as a public electricity supplier. Then the next year, in 1944, they wanted to expand because they wanted to take this good idea and spread it. So they had elections held in the towns of Toledo, Waldport, Florence, Reedsport, Lakeside, and unincorporated parcels of the counties of Lincoln, Lane, Douglas, and Coos, all but the cities of Toledo and Reedsport, and a small parcel in Douglas County voted to become. So those three did not join. All the others voted in the affirmative and were incorporated into the PUD. 16 years later, in 1960, another election was held to bring in those that had rejected it 16 years earlier, the cities of Toledo, Reedsport, and that small parcel in Douglas County. At that time, the citizens voted 3-1 in favor of joining the PUD and lower rates, and then also required by law the people within the existing PUD had to say, yes, you may come in, and they voted 5-1 in favor of bringing in new folks. Now, this is why it's such a threat to utilities, private utilities such as Portland General Electric, which is still owned by Enron today, and Pacific Power, which is now owned by Scottish Power, but will be sold to Warren Buffett, the billionaire, and Berkshire Hathaway, is that we always have the power under the Oregon Constitution to at any time, in any boundary, declare that we can create a publicly owned, at-cost utility. And the threat is that once you establish one, you can grow. And you can willingly accept people that want to join you in your PUD. And that's what makes it a great threat, that even a small PUD can grow over time. The next show I'll have, which is the first Monday in March, we'll be having additional information on the Northern Wasco PUD. They had a massive struggle with Pacific Power, and I think that's relevant in the light of Pacific Power is now being sold to a billionaire, and we'll be going further on that at the next show. In terms of something that just happened in the recent past, the Northwest Climate Education and Action Workshop put on by Greenhouse Network, it's run by Dr. Eben Goodstein out of Lewis and Clark College. And, you know, I heard him on KPOJ with the Tom Hartman show plugging the Greenhouse Network. And I've been doing environmental reporting for years, and I never heard of him. So I went down to Pioneer Square, and there was Cliff Bar, this company that had a tent. And they were doing all the work for Greenhouse Net. So there's a concept of having even benevolent corporations doing the work of environmental groups. So I'm keeping an open mind. I'm concerned. They had a panel discussion on Saturday the 28th at Lewis and Clark, and it was entitled Clean Energy and Electoral Politics, the Nexus Between Energy and Politics. And who were the three invited guests? You had Jeff Bissonnette of the Citizens Utility Board, which has never supported public power, although they say they have. They've done no actions to support public power. To the contrary, they've harmed public power. Jefferson Smith was with the bus project, which basically had PGE and PacifiCorp advertising on the Rebooting Democracy recently. And then they had Jim DePesso with Republicans for Environmental Protection. So I would submit that Greenhouse Net basically put forward centrist to a Republican in an effort to mainstream this issue where all the folks on the left, liberal, progressive, were left out. And the question is, why? More on that in the next show. Remember, every day is Earth Day, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's 11 a.m. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 or on the web at radiocab.net.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
My only historic alarm clock.